What's up? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning starting pitcher podcast brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and today is August 22nd, my birthday. Let's break down every single start from Friday, August 21st. We'll start it off with Hayden Wesneski, and the Astros sure love them some sweepers. They've employed plenty of pitchers who rely heavily on the pitch. Lance McCullers Jr. is the first that comes to mind. He's one of the first Houston starters to deploy one without much assistance from the rest of his arsenal. McCullers has plenty of other pitches, but that sweeper was the signature offering. And earlier this year, Kaiwei Tang had a stint in the rotation during which he showed such an affinity for sweepers that I nicknamed him the janitor. Returning from Tommy John surgery in July, Hayden Wesneski rejoined the Breaker Brigade, showcasing not only the best sweeper of the bunch, but one of the best in baseball. The right-hander deployed his signature pitch to great effect as he hosted the A's, tossing five shutout innings, allowing just one hit with three walks and four strikeouts, inducing 14 whiffs with 24% CSW across 91 pitches. And as expected, sweepers led the way with eight whiffs, 30% CSW, and four punchouts. But will Wesneski break the trend of Astros arms struggling without ancillary offerings? To answer that, we need to know the secondary options that Wesneski brings to the table. It's a trio of fastball variants, a poorly shaped 94-mile-per-hour four-seamer at 13 to 14 inches of IVB with 0.5 HAVA, not good. He's also got a 93-mile-per-hour sinker that doesn't grade out much better and a promising cutter that he rarely throws, but it was up a tick to 90 miles per hour on Friday. That sounds like a pair of pitches with which he's attempting to earn strikes while avoiding damage, and a third that needs some work. The real potential savior here is a changeup that typically sits at 86 miles per hour, but was up to 87 to 88 miles per hour on Friday, which is usually not a good thing because it reduces the velocity difference between the slow ball and the fastballs, but it grades out well with 4 to 6 inches of IVB and 14 to 16 inches of induced horizontal break, allowing the changeup to induce four whiffs with nearly 70% strikes on Friday as he displayed a feel for locating it low and arm side. The slow ball is so integral to his success because both sweepers and sinkers typically perform better or perform worse against opposite-handed batters. That actually hasn't been the case for Wesneski this year, but we should expect him to have more success against right-handed batters moving forward, given his love of the sweeper and his ability to mix things up more versus right-handed batters with two fastballs with the sinker and the four-seamer rather than just the four-seamer, which he uses against left-handed batters. The changeup gives him that weapon that he needs to take down left-handed batters that are looking to hunt low and in sweepers. It's also sort of worked out thus far, making his start days feel more like hump day. Yes, he needed some help from Koufax to return 10 outs on 11 balls in play on Friday, but he's allowed more than three earned runs just once in his first five starts this year, inducing double-digit whiffs in every single one of them. The presence of swing and miss hasn't led to the punchouts you'd expect, just a 20% strikeout rate thus far, but at least on Friday, that can be blamed on an unlucky 29% put-away rate. So does Wesneski break the Huascar rule where you need to have more than one elite pitch to be considered a pitcher we can trust? Sort of, but his changeup has been pretty solid and there's potential in the cutter making life easier against both lefties and righties. The four-seamer and sinker are never going to be great, but if they can live on the edges, preferably upstairs and arm side respectively, they should avoid enough damage and earn enough strikes to allow his sweeper to hunt for whiffs low and glove side. Wesneski will get a real test in the Bronx next, and while I'm not streaming him there in standard leagues, he needs to be rostered in deeper leagues and should be on the streaming menu if he continues to improve the further away he gets from surgery. Now let's see how every other starting pitcher did on Friday, starting with Mackenzie Gore versus the Angels. Six innings, no earned, two hits, one walk, and seven strikeouts. He induced 21 whiffs to earn the gallows pull. And is this the best version we've seen of Gore this year? I don't think so, but he did induce a season-high 21 whiffs to earn the gallows pull, but with four-seamers and changeups going sub 60% strikes and cutters being completely axed, we've definitely seen a better attack from Gore before. This had a bit of blame it on the Angels to it as well, and if it seems like I'm knocking his dope performance here, it's because it's a lot easier to find things wrong with the start than it is to find things to latch onto. I do love Gore's ability to keep four-seamers upstairs, maybe a little bit too far, keep changeups below the zone, maybe a little bit too far, and keep his sliders away from left-handed batters. I'm also surprised curveballs performed so well despite wild locations in this one. And across Gore's last five starts, he's been dominant, producing a 2.10 ERA, a 0.93 whip, and a 28% strikeout rate. But Gore isn't labeled a hipster for nothing. There is no guarantee that the command of this approach lasts beyond this start, but we've got to let him fly when he heads to Milwaukee next. Next, we've got Reed Detmers in Texas, 6 shutout innings, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. And I've come to terms with my fear of Detmers' demise. Seeing reduced velocity and a lack of pitch separation due to poor slider locations doesn't faze me at this point. He's going to succeed regardless of whether he effectively deploys his one-two punch. It's a little promising to see changeup step up for 67% strikes while staying away from right-handed batters. I also love curveball stealing some free real estate with 4 out of 8 called strikes. If Detmers continues to get supportive tertiary offerings, the fastball and slider don't have to be perfect. I am aware of the things we've been concerned about, but I wrote a whole article about it. It's called the SP Roundup, where I talked about how it doesn't matter. Sometimes you have to just accept that some of the things that you're looking at a pitcher that's causing you fear are just not going to lead to the downturn in results in this season. Detmers is not somebody that I'm probably going to draft next year, but I think you just got to keep rolling with him in 2026. Next, we've got Jacob Mizorowski versus the Braves. 6 innings, no earned, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And Ace is going to ace despite sub-50% four-seamer strikes. Cutters and sliders stepped up to drop Mizorowski's ERA to 1.68 on the year. And this was his second consecutive start with 6 punchouts, a mark that he eclipsed in all but 2 of his first 22 starts. Maybe the workload or the velocity has taken a toll on him, but nah, don't be silly. Seriously, don't joke about it. I want Mizorowski to continue to be dope throughout the end of the season. Next, we've got Eduardo Rodriguez versus the Reds. 5 2/3 shutout innings, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And really, what is it going to take to slow down E-Rod's year-long Vargas role? I feel like he could run through a brick wall with his changeup alone. He was down a tick across the board here, making it difficult for him to put batters away as efficiently as he'd like. Just a 29% per batter put away rate, reducing his strikeout total to 4, and a 10% per pitch put away rate, which pushed his pitch count up to 99 pitches through 5 2/3 frames, leading to the disappointing Philly here as he was just 1 out away from a quality start. I'm not worried in the least bit, though. Keep this boat rowing until the anchor catches something heavy on the ocean floor to stop the run. Next, we've got Noah Cameron versus the Tigers. 5 scoreless innings, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 2 strikeouts. And I know you were promised strikeouts. That's totally fair. Cameron had fanned at least 7 batters in 6 of his previous 8 outings. The other 2, a grand total of 3 strikeouts combined. When the Ks don't flow, it's been a product of an unlucky put-away rate. So we can expect Cameron to continue being dope. In those 2 underwhelming outings, it was a 14% put-away rate. Here, a below-average 20% mark. He's at 41% for the year. Cameron is still commanding his deep arsenal well, and we should be thrilled we got great ratios and a win despite having to look for our strikeouts elsewhere. Those Ks should return during this easy portion of his schedule as he heads to Toronto and then hosts the Marlins across the next 2 weeks. Next, we got Ryan Gusto versus the Nationals. 4 scoreless innings, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. Throwing 7 different pitches for 77% overall strikes is pretty darn impressive. Too bad it won't matter unless the Marlins give Gusto a longer leash. He's thrown 70 or fewer pitches in all but 3 of his 17 outings this year, preventing him from being able to qualify for wins, impact our ratios, or tally up strikeouts. The juice is not worth the squeeze with Ryan Gusto. Next, we've got Will Dion in Miami. 3 shutout innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And I think it's safe to ignore opener Brad Lord, whom the Nationals are unwilling to truly stretch out. They'd rather use him as a Swiss Army knife, opening games, pitching multiple innings in relief, shutting down high leverage situations, or even closing games. There is swatch potential with Dion, though. It's weird to see him acquired at the deadline and immediately stretched out after he was succeeding so well in his previous transition from being a starter to a reliever. He was so dope as a reliever for the Guardians. And there's some potential as a starter here. He throws 90 to 91 miles per hour with a great changeup and a curveball, but his super high 67 degree arm angle negates what is otherwise elite 21 inches of IVB. I see him as sort of a left-handed Alan Ronhell, not a glowing endorsement, but as a lefty, there's a chance that his slow ball and unique arm slot befuddle enough right-handed batters to allow him to vulture a few wins pitching in bulk relief. That's Will Dion. Next, we've got Cam Schlittler versus the Blue Jays. 6 innings, 1 earned 6 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace. Not the most pristine outing from Schlittler, as four seamers flew too high a few times, but his Razz Pack plus secret weapon curveball sets him up for success even when he singled out, as 5 of the 6 hits he allowed were singles in this one. Great job stranding those base runners like they're on a deserted island. 9 base runners, just 1 run allowed for Schlittler. Next, we've got Joey Cantillo in Colorado. 4 2/3 innings, 1 earned 4 hits, 4 walks, and 5 strikeouts. And Cantillo was about as efficient as a city jurisdiction releasing a building permit. And if you have no experience with those, let me tell you, it takes quite a long time to get one of those. It's the same approach from Cantillo with the increased velocity and increased curveball usage. He just lost his feel for everything except for his cutter, as curveballs, changeups, and four seamers combined for sub 50% strikes. Let's just blame this one on Coors and trust him to carry us in the fantasy playoffs with easy matchups in Anaheim and then hosting the Blue Jays and then in Baltimore across the next few weeks. Next, we've got Randy Vasquez versus the Twins. 7 innings, 2 earned, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And do you really need me to tell you that the guy with a sub 9% strikeout rate across his last 11 outings shouldn't be trusted to survive with such a heavy reliance on balls in play finding gloves? I know it's sort of a common courtesy to say it, but don't trust Randy. I don't care if cutters are coming in 2 ticks harder to sit 93 miles per hour. They produced just 23% CSW on Friday. This was a Koufax special, as Vasquez returned 18 outs on 20 balls in play. And I think you got the point when I said don't trust Randy. Next, we got Yoshinobu Yamamoto versus the Pirates. 6 1/3 innings, 2 earned, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace for the King Cole, as he led baseball with 37% CSW. Yamamoto is doing his best to erase the evidence that led to us decrying his lack of strikeouts. He's fanned 9 batters in consecutive starts, something he did just twice in his first 21 starts. And in the process, he's raised his strikeout rate a full point to 25%. Keep it rising, just like the suspicion about the Dodgers' finances. Next, we've got Chris Sale in Milwaukee. 6 innings, 2 earned, 8 hits, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace, and it doesn't get more singled out than this. Sale allowed 8 hits. All 8 hits were singles. It hurts even more to see him doing his best to combat those batted balls with 58% grounders and 58% weak contact. Maybe next time we don't lose a tick of velocity so our put-away rate doesn't fall below 40%. Oh well, Sale was dope regardless, and you're probably happy with this start anyway. Next, we've got Troy Melton in Kansas City. 5 2/3 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And regression was expected from Melton after his ridiculously hot start, making me want to just write off his last 2 underwhelming outings. The issues weren't the same in both of them, though. Last time, he got BABIP to death. On Friday in Kansas City, it was a pair of solo shots that accounted for both runs and a 2-out walk in the 5th that led to a hook and a Philly here, as he was just 1 out away from the quality start. His cutter hasn't been touched as much as or thrown as hard recently, but I'm not remotely considering doing anything dramatic with Melton after he's had so much success this year. Even after these 2 bad starts, his ERA is still below 2. Next, we've got Trevor Rogers versus the Rays. 7 innings, 3 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. And if you don't know by now, Rogers is a swatch, a southpaw with a tight changeup, pulling off the Blake Snell blueprint with high four seamers and low changeups while mixing in sweepers and cutters to keep batters honest. You can't forget that he throws sinkers to left-handed batters as well. Just like last year, Rogers is on a wonderful run that should last through the end of the year as long as his command doesn't waver. Since the beginning of June, Rogers has recorded a 2.57 ERA, a 105 whip, and a 23% strikeout rate across 14 starts. We love living the swatch life. Next, we'll talk about Emerson Hancock, JT Ginn, Hunter Dobbins, and the rest of the starters that pitched on Friday. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on the Plus Pitch Podcast. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here, breaking down every single start from Friday's games, resuming with Emerson Hancock versus the Cubs, 5 2/3 innings, 3 earned, 8 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts. And why does it feel so burdensome to have to repeat the same concerns we have with Hancock every week? And I think it's because they just never disappear. His four-seamer still has reduced IVB. He's still too reliant on fastballs, and his secondaries aren't good enough to step up and make a difference. Thus, you get this Philly with a decent amount of strikes. 6 strikeouts, but 1 out away from the quality start. The whip is bad. The ERA is bad. It's not good. Don't let Hancock's early season success or his ability to be somebody trusted in quality start leagues fool you. Hancock has a 3.72 ERA, a 1.20 whip, and a 21% strikeout rate in 17 starts since he fanned 14 strikeouts, since he fanned 14 batters in his first start of May. The dude's a Toby who gets to pitch in T half of the time, and that's why you get the reduced ratios. Next, we've got JT Ginn in Houston, 5 innings, 3 earned, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Ginn is on the other side of the spectrum from Hancock, forced to pitch in Sacre Verde half the time. It makes him a solid streaming option on the road, where he's pitched to a 3.63 ERA, a 1.06 whip, and a 24% strikeout rate in 14 outings. It didn't work on Friday as sliders and cutters failed to support his signature sinker, combining for just 45% strikes. That meant Ginn had to up his sinker usage, throwing them half the time, allowing batters to sit on them in the zone and belt them for 3 hits, including back-to-back fifth inning doubles that scored a pair of runs. Ginn heads back home to host the Twins before hopping in the RV for another road trip in Texas and Seattle afterwards, where he'll be back on the streaming menu. Next, we've got Hunter Dobbins in Philadelphia, 4 innings, 3 earned, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And well, the velocity disappeared again, and so did the extra movement on his pitches that got us interested in the first place. It's the worst of both worlds. Oh, he also lost his command, leading to just 55% overall strikes. It's the worst of three worlds. With the Orioles and Hollywood on the horizon, it's best to ignore Dobbins, hand him a sock, and set him free. Next, we've got Spencer Arrighetti in the Bronx, 3 1/3 innings, 3 earned, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And in his Blue Jays debut, Arrighetti was opened for by southpaw Mason Flaherty. And if you expected the new threads to suddenly transform the pasta pirate into a command arm, I commend your optimism. Toronto is making an effort to combat his lack of strikes by having him throw more sinkers and combining with four-seamers to feature fastballs more than half the time. It makes sense. You'd expect him to be able to throw more strikes with the pitches that move the least. It is a step in the right direction, though. We have begged the Astros to have him throw his other off-speed pitches more often. That curveball is dope, but the sweeper and cutter, probably not the changeup, could shine if given the opportunity. Let's just wait and see what Arrighetti's doing when he's up to 80 pitches in a couple of weeks. Next, we've got Sean Burke versus the Mets. 6 innings, 4 earned, 7 hits, no walks, and 4 strikeouts. And Burke's hot streak has come to a screeching halt with back-to-back 4-run outings. I don't think anything has changed, though, to suggest he deserves to be going downhill. Elite four-seamers are getting upstairs. Breakers are landing low, and cutters are mixing in to keep batters honest. All but his changeup, which he threw just twice, earned 70% plus strikes for a 76% overall strike rate. Burke is doing everything he's supposed to, but diminished put-away rates are preventing him from being the dominant strikeout arm he was in the middle of the summer. Maybe Burke needs to trust his stuff to get out of the zone to get chases and whiffs more often. Either way, I'm not thinking twice about starting him versus the Rangers next. Next, we've got Sean Manaea on the south side of Chicago. 6 innings, 4 earned, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And throwing 2 ticks harder to sit 93-plus miles per hour, Manaea was untouchable through 5 1/3 innings. Then disaster struck. A free pass preceded back-to-back-to-back home runs, 3 straight home runs off of Manaea. He finished off the frame, but boy, reality hit hard. There was really only one mistake pitch, a center cut sweeper to Miguel Vargas for the first long ball, but the other two came on fastballs that fell below 92 miles per hour, calling into question Manaea's stamina when throwing at 93 plus miles per hour. It's the Brewers next before a Florida two-step in Tampa Bay and in Miami. I think you keep rolling with Manaea in leagues where pitching is hard to come by, where you can't drop him for anybody that's better than him. But if you can, maybe avoid him versus the Brewers before going all in for those latter two starts in Florida. Next, we've got Sonny Gray against the Giants. 6 innings, 4 earned, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. A pair of dingers flew over Sonny's head, forcing him to confront the gray skies above him. His sweeper has been the X factor this year, and his feel for it has been missing for a few starts now. Luckily, he's got a deep arsenal to offset its disappearance on most nights. In his next start, the domed Lone Depot Park should allow Gray to avoid any forecasts of clouds obstructing the sun. Next, we've got Matthew Boyd in Seattle. 6 innings, 4 earned, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts. A disastrous second frame featuring a 3-run dinger made this start look a lot worse than it was, though it is disappointing having the Swatch fail to take advantage of a cushy matchup in Seattle, continuing a string of starts in which he hasn't been at his best. Boyd has pitched to a 6.12 ERA with a 10% strikeout rate across his last 4 starts, coinciding with an increase in home runs. Boyd has served up 8 dingers during that span after allowing just 6 in his first 12 starts. It also coincides with a string of 9 starts during which he's induced double-digit whiffs just once. His Blake Snell blueprint hasn't been pristine as usual, preventing one of his four-seamer or changeup from joining the other in missing bats in any given start and leading to poor command that produces more home runs. The Toby ceiling with Boyd isn't really worth chasing anyway, so I'd be giving him a break in Arizona next. Next, we got Jesus Luzardo versus the Cardinals. 5 2/3 innings, 4 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. Ace is going to give up a ridiculous 2-run homer to Joshua Baez. Got to tip your hat to him. It was a ridiculous homer, and I saw the ball off the bat. It looks like a pop-up, but it somehow got out of the park in the opposite field. He also gave up another 2-run shot to Jordan Walker in the 6th to hand this Philly a Philly. At least Luzardo salvaged this dusty donut with 9 strikeouts and reassured you he's going to be fine by pointing to his lack of home runs this year. He had just 12 home runs this season and pointing to his upcoming matchup in T. We love Aces. Luzardo heads to Seattle, which is going to be a pretty dope location for his next successful outing. Next, we've got Bubba Chandler in Hollywood. 4 innings, 4 earned, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And this was a clear do not start with Chandler heading to Hollywood and having failed to shake his hipster label. He tried to get it done with brute force, featuring his highest velocity of the year, sitting 99.6 miles per hour with four seamers and adding 3 ticks to sit nearly 94 miles per hour with sliders. Faster four seamers were difficult to command, returning just 55% strikes, and Dodgers hitters had no problem handling them, turning them around for a trio of hits and a homer. Locations really matter. You can't just go up there with incredible stuff and expect to get it done. And that's sort of been the problem with Chandler all year long. I'm really looking forward to 2027. Next, we've got Freddy Peralta in Baltimore. 7 innings, 5 earned, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. And the high earned run count and long leash suggest that Peralta might have been pushed too far for a careful Icarus, but nope. Peralta had 5 runs on his ledger through 5 frames, but the Rays saw an opportunity to keep the bullpen rested by squeezing some volume out of Peralta. What's in it for us fantasy managers? I guess 1 extra strikeout and ratios that don't hurt as bad. It's not really great. The Rays are still having Peralta throw more changeups and fewer four-seamers, but the heater still couldn't avoid damage, allowing 5 hits and 2 home runs. To avoid damaging our fantasy rosters, we've got to avoid Peralta until he proves to be worthwhile. Next, we've got Tanner Gordon versus the Guardians. 5 1/3 innings, 5 earned, 9 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. And even with a decent Blake Snell blueprint approach and secondaries combining for all 9 whiffs and a whopping 89% strikes, Gordon's four-seamer got destroyed. Coors is undefeated. Third to last, we got Logan Webb in Boston. 2 2/3 innings, 5 earned, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 2 strikeouts. And Webb nearly escaped the third, but a 2-out single set up Wilson Contreras to hit an absolute nuke over the Green Monster. Webb lost it after that, serving up a couple of singles before hitting a batter, walking the next one, and plunking another guy. This is a textbook one-night bland from Logan Webb. Write this one off, start him next time, look in the mirror, shrug your shoulders, and say, what are you going to do? Next, we've got Connor Prelip in San Diego. 6 innings, 6 earned, 8 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Oof, that's 14 runs across Prelip's last 2 starts. Sliders are doing their job, but this young gun is breaking the Huascar rule with nothing to support that slider. I don't think curveballs are the savior. Sinkers falling off the outside edge to right-handed batters are not the key. And four-seamers sitting middle-middle is unintentional. The command needs a lot of work, and I'd love him to figure out changeups. On the bright side, Prelip is massively depressing his 2027 ADP, making him a sleeper for next year's fantasy drafts. Lastly, we've got Nick Lodolo in Arizona, 3 1/3 innings, 6 earned, 10 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. And finger blisters have prevented Lodolo from getting into a rhythm all year. It also seems as though they've affected his command, which maybe that's another way of talking about his rhythm. Regardless, it was worse than ever on Friday as changeups, curveballs, and four seamers combined for sub 50% strikes. If not for sinkers going for 75% strikes, Lodolo would have walked more than just a pair of batters. Though living in the zone meant they served up 4 hits and a homer. A huge factor in this blowup was a 529 BABIP that should dissipate when he heads to the park by the bay next time in San Francisco. I don't blame you, though, if you're unwilling to put your trust in this hipster with your fantasy playoffs on the line. Lodolo has rarely displayed the upside that made him a consensus top 40 pitcher in the spring. That's every start from Friday. If you were looking forward to my game of the day on Saturday, we got Cade Anderson versus David Peterson. Cade Anderson is the number one pitching prospect in baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. I am beyond pumped to see what he looks like in his MLB debut. But that'll do it for this episode of the Plus Pitch Podcast. That's every single start from Friday, August 21st. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out the article that accompanies this podcast, the SP Roundup. Also, sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro. We have a ton of amazing features on the site, and you get access to the Discord and early access to any new features that are coming out. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers, and I break down every single start via the Pitcherlist Stats player card. Tune into YouTube and to the Pitcherlist Podcast Network for all of the other great podcasts we have here coming out of Pitcherlist. We'll talk to you tomorrow when we break down every single start from Saturday.